Welcome to the Head Ballet Podcast. This is the place to come to hear my guests discuss with me, Paul Abbott, their favourite novelty songs. The funny, the weird, the daft, and the outright wombling tunes that have been skipping and wombling around in their heads for years. Everybody loves something that could be considered wombly, so why not celebrate it? Joining me today for this overground and underground Christmas adventure is womble, I mean musician, voiceover actor and impressionist, Daryl McLean, who you'll find on Twitter as @MacLockdown, where you'll also be able to find links to his brilliant YouTube channel with the TV themes in the style of videos. Yes, there is womble content there, as there is in this podcast, as if you haven't guessed, because Daryl has brought along a certain costumed Christmas smash from 1974. So I hope you've been enjoying the bonus Christmas episodes, and this will be the last one for a while, until I get back at some point in the new year with season 2 of the show. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the podcast, everyone. I really appreciate it, and I hope you have a brilliant new year. Now, to Wimbledon. Right, Daryl, I reckon there are some animals that are very associated with Christmas, and I'm thinking of things like the lovely little robin, the reindeer, perhaps a donkey. But tonight we're going to be talking about perhaps one of the lesser known in the world of natural history animals, and one that somehow has had several chart hits. What on earth are we going to be talking about tonight, Daryl?
We're going to be talking about the wombles.
Now, you and I know what a womble is, but there's a very real chance that some people, unfortunately, don't know what a womble is. So you better explain what a womble is.
The animal or the phenomenon. So the womble was, it was in a series of children's books that were kind of, I think they were in the 50s, 60s by Elizabeth Beresford. And in the early 70s, there was a BBC animation made of them. The theme tune of that by Mike Batt eventually rolled off into a kind of single, an album, which kind of became a pop group spin-off. So this pop group spin-off was a little bit like the Banana Splits in America or the Beagles. No one remembers the Beagles. They were kind of like a dog Beatles.
Of course they were.
And they were our version of that, really. So they were a fictitious group, you know, and they were stop motion on TV, and then for the live performances on Top of the Pops and things, there were people in costumes miming along to the records. And there were, you know, more books and then more records and lots of singles and a film. But particularly, there was one year, 1974, where it became Womble Mania in the UK. And it's one of those things that's really difficult to explain afterwards, just how much output there was, a bit like Dalek Mania in 1965.
Indeed.
It seems that all economic activity with selling things to children was based around the wombles in 1974.
Yeah, and I do, in fact, have a little thing on my notes here, just in big letters, I've just got the words peak womble, which I've written partway down a list of what they put out. So yeah, you're completely right. But yeah, the animal, the womble, if anyone doesn't know, it's supposedly some sort of underground mammal of some sort whose main activities are tidying up litter.
It's kind of, they're a little bit badgery, they're a little bit kind of stoaty, they're kind of at the rodent end, but yeah. Bit, maybe a bit like a fox, but more kind of rodenty.
Yeah, but I'm very keen on their litter cleaning activities, and I think that probably for a whole generation, which would include me, because these cartoons in the 70s were shown repeatedly into the 80s anyway, sort of reinforced this, you know, pick up litter notion, which is very, very important, and perhaps we need a modern wombles to try and keep the message going.
Quite early on in these kind of cartoon characters for children doing things, they became, you know, they grew out of the merchandise stuff, and they did become using educational stuff and public service stuff. You did see pictures of wombles on things, and it kind of is a little bit tied into the Keep Britain Tidy campaign that ran for decades and decades. And it's easy to things like Wellifant that happened later in the 80s and various other kind of safety. I think about that. My generation had a booklet written by Roald Dahl about not putting your head out of train windows and things like
indeed.
That. So there's a bit of a culture of trying to gently teach children to do important things by, you know, amusing them or using characters and things. And I think the Wombles are quite right at the start of that, pretty much the fathers of that.
Yeah, and we should mention, of course, that the animation was voiced by, narrated and voiced by Bernie Cribbins, who has appeared on this, well, not him, he hasn't personally appeared on this podcast. I wish he had.
It's still time.
Well, I know, he's still knocking around, still an entertaining chap. And, yeah, he's such a wonderful voice, and he's a big part of people's childhoods, even if it just was Jack and Ori alone. But it's lovely that he's part of that. But like you say, we end up via the theme tune at a bunch of singles. So what's the one we're mainly going to be focusing on today?
Okay, well, this all started at the very end of 1973, and there was a big run of them all through 1974. And the whole kind of Womble phenomenon kind of climaxes at the end of 1974. And obviously, we're coming up to Christmas. It's no coincidence. The final single of 1974 was Wombling Merry Christmas. The year before, there'd been the Slade and Wizard battle, which is the media made a big deal of, and it was the same year as the Elton John one. So Christmas singles were a big thing for the Wombles to kind of take on. So Mike Batt wrote a big Womble Christmas single, Wombling Merry Christmas.
And it's their biggest hit as well. It gets to number two in the charts. Mm. It's very much in the mould of the Slade song, and that's it's proper a glam stomper, isn't it? It's got all the sounds you associate with that era.
Well, the great thing about all the Womble records is there's a lot of kind of very sophisticated parody stuff going on. So they will do a Bond theme and it will sound just like a Bond theme, or they'll do a Rick Wakeman parody that lasts 6 minutes and with a London Symphony Orchestra on it, and everything is as it should be. And it's kind of a almost like music education, really, because if Mike Batt chooses to do a genre, he does it properly. He does it. You know, there's no records made for adults these days which are as expensive and elaborate as those Womble singles and albums were in, like, 1973, 4, 5. He was an orchestrator and an arranger himself, but he knew every session musician and he knew who to get for everything. So I think there's one Womble song that with the Rick Wakeman one, and it's got over 100 musicians on it.
Bloody hell!
It's got the normal band and Mike Batt singing, and it's got the London Symphony Orchestra and a huge choir. So that's one track on a children's novelty album with over 100 musicians on it. And that kind of detail is what makes these records work now as well as then.
They're fantastic articles. They really are born out of the era. But in a strange way, I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, whether it freezes them in the past a little bit because they don't become contemporary 10 years later, although they have re-released things, you know, and they've had chart success again in later years. But maybe one of the joys of it is that it's perfect 70s-ness.
Yeah, I mean, it does. There's a nostalgic sound to it, partly because it does remind you of the other more famous 1970s Christmas singles. I mean, not that this was, you know, any less famous. So, you know, the year before, Wizard got to number two, and, you know, that's been remembered ever since. But this year, you know, the year after 1974... Wombly Merry Christmas was a number two hit single about Christmas, but no one really canonises it. It's not really been on the compilations. I suppose what really holds against these singles having much of an afterlife is because of the word Wombles, really.
Yes.
The sad thing is these are kind of great songs in and of themselves, and the references to Wombles are quite rare. You know, it's only the odd use of the word Womble, maybe the odd line, the odd character name, the word Wombling as a verb now and again. They're quite standalone pop songs in every other way. And if the word Wombling wasn't in that song, I think you probably would have seen it on Now the Christmas album in 1985 and all the compilations after it. And I think it would have been more of a legacy track, but it's kind of tied into, oh, it's children's, it's novelty, it's Wombles. Because people are quite purist. Like, I noticed that the Darkness song from getting on 20 years ago now hasn't quite had the reach it might have done because it's got two kind of juvenile puns in the lyrics, and just two kind of dirty jokes in a song is enough to just take it out of that top tier. So people are quite purist about the Christmas song, as it seems. But your Wombling Merry Christmas is synonymous with the mid-70s, hasn't really, you know, you don't hear it on the radio unless it's a kind of speciality track or it's been played as a bit of a joke. It's a shame because it is great.
It is a fantastic little tune. Facts and figures wise, like I say, it gets to number two in the charts. It's on the charts for 8 weeks at one position or another. It was released on CBS. So we're not talking some weird little imprint or unknown label. This is CBS that puts it out, catalogue number 2842. And so there's a good whack of money behind it, which clearly there needed to be if Mike Batt's ambitions were to be realised with orchestras and bands and promo and all that stuff. But there's still a bit of a homemade quality about it, I think, because I was reading a little interview with Mike Batt where he said the Wombles costumes were made by his mum.
Yeah.
So you're paying for 100 musicians for a track on an album, but his mum's knocking up the Womble costumes for Top of the Pops that night.
Well, I think because he was over the whole project, he's had quite a good, not just a music producer mindset, but a good kind of producer mindset of trying to get the money where it's needed. The first Womble album sounds a little bit more like a kind of early Wings. It's a little bit less elaborate, it's still got an orchestra on it, but it's a little bit smaller, it's a little bit less ambitious. And I think because that did so well, he clearly thought, we're going to put all the money at these sessions where it's needed. When I need the King Singers to help me out, or when I need the London Symphony Orchestra, I can get them. And it will all go into this. And there were other things. I think they made a few videos at the time, and they were on children's TV a lot. So those costumes really did get a lot of use, including the year later in 1975. I think the goodies are fighting them.
Well, yeah, they are occupying part of this top 10 at the time with the goodies, but we'll come back to that top 10 at some point. I think, like you say, 1974 is this year of Womble mania. So you've got the Wombling song, which is essentially the theme to the TV programme. Yeah. Then Remember You're a Womble, which is probably the most famous one because it's not a seasonal one.
Yeah. And people get that mixed up with the Wombling song. They think that Remember You're a Womble was the theme tune, and then they kind of become one song, like one mega medley in their head, but they were two separate songs.
Jive Womble. There's one called Banana Rock, which I'd never heard. It gets to number 9, but it's this weird calypso strange thing.
Banana Rock is one of the only, it's a good song, but it's one of the only elements of the Wombles catalogue that you can perhaps go, hasn't really aged very well.
No.
There's a bit of an accent there, which you wouldn't do if you were doing it now. I mean, well-intentioned at the time, and it's all part of this, music education element to the Womble music, but you wouldn't do that now, and I wouldn't expect anybody to play that now on mainstream radio.
No, indeed. And perhaps this one wouldn't get played simply because of its maybe highbrow status, but the one after this, which gets to number 16, is Minuetto Allegretto.
Yes, which I think is a Mozart piece with new lyrics. It's a very high concept thing, and I think the ambition of it, I think it did fall in the charts a little bit, that one.
Yeah.
Maybe people were sick of the Wombles a little bit by then, or maybe people couldn't quite grasp what the idea was. It wasn't just bubblegum pop. Oh, Womble to your partners, young Wombles were told. If you minuetto allegretto, you will live to be old. But, it's part of this whole legacy, and there are a few tracks on the Womble records which are trying to teach children about classical music. There's a In the Hall of the Mountain Womble on one of them, and, big with kind of big symphonic instruction. So it was well intentioned, but I don't think it quite captured that chart mindset, and I think Mike Batt maybe realized might have pushed it too far in the singles stakes here.
Yeah.
So when we get to 1974, right towards the end of it, you go big Christmas single to end the year, just like the ones that were a hit last year. Let's go for it. And he does, there's all those harmonies. There is an orchestra, his session band, who were absolutely, the top people. Clem Cattini, who was in like Joe Meek's band, was the drummer on them. And Chris Spedding did all the guitars on them. So it was they were absolute crack session musicians doing these.
Yeah, well, if you look down the list of credits for any of the people that played on this, particularly Clem Cattini and Chris Spedding, I mean, the names that they have either, Clem Cattini was actually in some of these bands that were already being held up as sort of legendary British beat bands or pop or early rock or whatever you want to call them, let alone all the thousands of people these people played with.
Yeah, I mean, Clem Cattini is on Telstar. He's drumming on Telstar. That's how fast his legacy goes back.
Yeah, like stuff with Johnny Kidd and the Pirates and things like that. It's, incredible stuff. So it's a great band doing this. And they've got Mike Batt at the helm. So really, we should talk a little bit more about who Mike Batt is, I suppose, because I think he's a name a lot of people know, but they perhaps don't know quite the the breadth of the work he's done over the years.
Yeah, I think Mike Batt is undersung quite a lot, because it's like people know of his successes. They know about the Wombles, and they know that he had all those hits with Katie Melua about 15, 20 years ago. And I think they know about things like A Winter's Tale. But they don't really give him credit for what he is, really. And he's a really rare example of a singer-songwriter who is his own arranger and orchestrator. That, you know, it would be like if Paul McCartney and George Martin were the same person. You wouldn't expect one person to be able to do all that work, which is another reason he can put the money into the sessions. And, you know, he doesn't have to hire this person. He doesn't have to hire that person. He can be his own arranger, his own conductor. He started out in the late 60s. Interestingly enough, with the title of this podcast, he was the A&R man for Liberty Records at the end of the 60s.
All right.
So he just slightly overlapped with when the Bonzos were on their way out, just as they were kind of splitting up.
Yeah.
He was the A&R man. So I think he was kind of around at the time the Bonzos were falling apart and the Brain Opera album didn't happen. And he was going forward from that. And he released a few little singles himself. And he was doing things like arrangements for the Idle Race, you know, the early Jeff Lynne band, and anyone that needed orchestration or this or that, he would do that as the A&R man. So he was a bit of a Swiss Army knife for that label.
Yeah.
And then obviously he tried to do bits of scoring. And I think the Wombles was the first time he really found his first real success. And it kind of gave him the opportunities to try and make it as a solo artist. But after that, he's done loads of albums and soundtracks, and, you know, his discography is really great. He's one of those people like Neil Innes who people know who it is, but people don't really know the albums. They don't know one album from another, but it's really worth going into that. And I think they are all on streaming and they're all back in print on CD, so it's really worth investing in his catalogue. There's a best of just come out, which is, you know, a good place to start.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. I mean, he is, yeah, like you say, just a machine, really. One of my favourite things of his is I'm a big fan of Steel Eye Span.
Yeah.
And of course, the biggest hit that they have is All Around My Hat, the single off the album of the same name, which is a great, again, it's a 70s boogie thing that he's done to this folk rock band, but he takes them right up into the, you know, the top of the charts again, or near to the top of the charts anyway with that. It doesn't last past that album much further. He does one more album with them, but, it, you know, All Around My Hat is brilliant.
Yeah, and there's lots of records where people go, oh, is that Mike Batt? And oh, is that Mike Batt? Like Phantom of the Opera or Oh, What a Circus by David Essex. There's sometimes I remember watching the Kenny Everett box set. I didn't know that Mike Batt produced that record. And I was watching the Kenny Everett box set where they show the promo videos of that song. And I'm just thinking, that sounds a bit Wombly to me. And this is Mike Batt doing the backing vocals. Oh, yeah, he produced that as well. But there's so many things going, you know, everyone knows the Big Break theme tune.
Yes.
She's from The Haunting of the Snark. Everyone knows that. But they might not know it was him that did it or, you know, where it came from. And he did Swap Shop.
Oh, right.
As well. A theme to Swap Shop.
And everyone's favourite Dead Rabbit song, Bright Eyes.
Bright Eyes.
He writes and produces.
I think was still pretty much his biggest single success, really. I think that was at 1976. So that was post-Womble, really. That was him kind of proving himself after the Womble thing happened. But still small furry animals in a field.
Although sort of metaphysically terrifying in this case. I remember, actually, quite clearly when Hunting of the Snark came out in the 80s and there being a big TV recording of the concert on, which is when I first sort of knew his name. And then remembering that when an animation came on in the 90s called The Dreamstone on ITV.
Yeah, The Dreamstone, which I only ever used to see the last 2 minutes of, because I think I was, I vividly remember the last 2 minutes of it. I think it was on before, maybe it was on before Nightmare or something that I was actually watching.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So I seem, because I was a CBBC child, so I think I remember the end of it. I don't think I watched it very often, but I do remember when I was going through Mike Batt's discography and I heard the theme tune and I was like, oh yeah, this, I know this song. Stranger than my wild imagination. If
this is a real sensation, it's better than a dream. It's amazing how the music's tied up in that. I do remember that for some reason specifically being a Mike Batt thing. Now, do we know how he's dealt with the Womble's legacy? Has he ever said anything about it? Does it cast a shadow over him? Is he fed up with it? Does he revel in it?
Well, it's. I think he's been on both sides, really, because there's been a couple of attempts to kind of bring everything back. There was a big Womble revival in the late 90s because there was a new TV series. I think they sold Film Fur over to another company and they made some new episodes. So he thought, well, I'm getting back in on this, you know, released the singles. And they did quite well. The Wombling song and Remember You're a Womble, they did actually have a bit of, you know, rebound success. And then in around the millennium, there was very relevant, there was a one-off kind of new single, which was a mashup of Wombling Merry Christmas and I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day by Roy Wood. Now, it doesn't work, really. it's the most charitable. I think the original idea was that Noddy Holder would be on it as well, and it would be a mashup of Merry Christmas Everybody as well, which suddenly, when you hear that, you go, oh, I can see what the idea was now. Yeah. And that would have worked if it was all, but the way it happened, it's just Roy Wood and the Wombles, and it doesn't... it's why is this, I think? I mean, it's beautifully produced, and it's, you know, got a lovely arrangement on it, but it's... I don't know how it would have been a hit, really.
Well, it got to number 22, so, you know, it did something.
It had a video, you know, it was played around. I didn't realise it got that high, actually. I feel quite bad now. Obviously, the record buying public were a bit less cynical than me.
Oh, they're just desperate for Wombles.
I think I just want to hear the Noddy Holder version, you know, as originally envisioned. That's what I want. That I can see that in my mind's eye. I want that one.
Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you mean, as just even quickly thinking about it. But this... one that's our main one for the topic here, which is Wombling Merry Christmas. Mm. It's a lovely little Christmas song. It's like a lot of stuff. There's a certain melancholy to it, although it's quite an upbeat thing. It's open your eyes, look to the skies when you're lonely, it opens with.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a thing that kind of ties a lot of Mike Batt's stuff together, really. I mean, it's just his singing voice as well. There's a melancholy in everything he does, whether he's trying to or not. I don't think there's anything he's done which is kind of like... pure happiness. There's always this sentimental side, and obviously sentimentality and melancholy are kind of hand in hand. And I don't mean sentimentality as a bad word either. It's just there through his work, you know. They're quite high emotion, whether it's a bit suppressed or it's right up at the front. There was a lot of heart on his sleeve stuff in his lyrics and his music, and I think that's one of the reasons that the Wombles projects really work, actually, because they have sympathy. So they're not kind of just stupid or annoying as they could have been, you know, they were silly voices. They are like quite fragile human characteristics coming through the sign of the suits. And it's all the way through, as you say, you know, lonely. There's lots of things about being lonely and being sad and wanting a friend and wanting a hug. And
it's very relevant for our times at the moment, really.
You could socially distance within the Womble costumes. They would have been a good act to bring back, actually. You know, you could have done that. You wouldn't see the masks. They could have appeared on stage together. Someone's missing a trick there.
We could all be wearing Womble costumes and we might all be happier. It should have been government issued. I should mention the flip side of this single as well, which is Madame Cholet.
Yeah, which is off the first album. It's kind of a ballad from the original album in 1973. So, because Wombling Merry Christmas was from the third album, Keep On Wombling. So it kind of just... got an old track and, you know, brought it forward. Madame Cholet is in the film as well, the not very good film from a couple of years, about 76, 77. Madame Cholet is in that as well. So it's one of the key tracks, clearly, in Mike Batt's mind. Madame Cholet.
Yeah, it runs nearly 4 minutes long, and it is quite a contrast to the A side. It's if you think you're going to keep the party going by flipping over the disc, it's basically all about feeding, having to work to feed all the Wombles.
Well, he wouldn't. I think he wanted you to get the album because there was an album out at the same time, which Wombling Merry Christmas was also on. So I wonder if it might have got to number one if maybe people hadn't have bought the album as well.
Oh, yes.
It was quite an unusual situation where the single and the album were out at the same time, both with the track on. So obviously if you bought the album, you wouldn't really need to buy the single. So that might have taken its number one from it, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think it got to number two anyway, if you factor that in, you might well be right. So on the subject of charts, what I thought I might do is have a look at the top 10 when this got to its peak position, which is the chart for the week of the 4th of January 1975. So it goes into the charts during the Christmas period and is there over the new year. And if you could offer me some thoughts on the top 10, and I'll run up from the bottom. So at number 10 that week, we've got Down Down by Status Quo.
We're properly into the bubblegum high ranking there already, aren't we?
Yeah. That's a great song. Not Christmassy, but fine.
Party song.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and then we'll probably skip quite quickly over number 9 because that's Oh Yes, You're Beautiful by Gary Glitter.
Oh dear.
Which is an awful song by an awful human. Number 8, You're the First, the Last, My Everything by Barry White.
Another one that's lasted. That's quite a fruitful chart, this.
Then we get to number 7 and we have, it's a technically a double A-side, it's the In-Betweenies and Father Christmas Do Not Touch Me by the Goodies.
Ah, well, the Goodies and the Wombles are kind of rivals for a while. I think it's one of the reasons why the Goodies ended up doing the kind of the naughty album instead. I think they were stuck in a bit of a stew, you know, associated with acts like the Wombles and the Bay City Rollers.
Yeah.
But there was definitely a rivalry there, hence why they have a fight in that Christmas special. And I don't think there was a lot of good feeling really amongst them. It doesn't seem like they were particularly keen to be associated with each other either.
And the irony being that several of the musicians who played on the Wombles record played on the Goodies record as well.
Oh yeah, Chris Spedding is definitely on some Goodies sessions because I looked it up. He was a traitor.
But yeah, Father Christmas Do Not Touch Me is Battle Hymn of the Republic with a sort of novelty, slightly rude.
Yeah, another one categorises, you wouldn't really play it now.
No, indeed. But you definitely would play number 6 because it's You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet by Barkman Turner Overdrive.
Wow, this is some top 10, this. This is, you know, smashing nicey territory now.
But number 5 is Elvis Presley, 70s Elvis, and it's My Boy.
You know, I can genuinely say I've never heard My Boy.
Well, I can genuinely say don't bother because we talked about melancholy before. It's all about someone in a loveless marriage, but deciding to stay in a loveless marriage because he loves his children. Now, in some ways, that's, you know, no, there's no good way about that. It's emotionally, it's all over the place. It is awful.
I think in the Christmas song territory, we're probably into the slightly drunk uncle at the end of a Christmas party standing outside in the rain with a woodbine kind of music. Yes. There.
Almost definitely, because he might also be singing what's at number 4, another upbeat super hit, which is Streets of London by Ralph McTell.
Wow. Nearly every song in this top 10 is like still compiled and played and making money today, which is quite something considering it's nearly 50 years ago. 56 years ago. No, 46. Yeah, 46 years ago. Yeah,
please let it be 46.
46 years ago.
Number 3, though, I think this one perhaps hasn't lasted quite as well, which is Jukebox Jive by the Rubettes.
Well, the Rubettes, another kind of novelty party band, though, so you can see why they did well at Christmas. You know,
yeah,
it's perfectly harmless, but it's another thing where it's, you know, people buying big productions, big elaborate records, glamorous and high value and expensive sounding compared to what was going on in the real world, which was kind of grey and cheap and deprived.
Yeah, it's a very slight song, Jukebox Jive. It's just one idea done for as long as it takes.
Well, that's the Rubettes, really. One idea done, yes, done, yeah, for as long as it takes. The best of.
Oh, gosh, I hope they're not listening. Number 2, Wombling Merry Christmas, obviously. And at number 1, it's a Christmas song, a big Christmas song, combines the melancholy we've talked about, a great performance on Top of the Pops, Lonely This Christmas by Mudd.
Ah, well, I was just thinking about that, because obviously we've got the real Elvis in that top 10, and then an Elvis parody, kind of,
yes,
beating him in the charts. Well, that's another great song, and that song has been canonised, of course. That is on, I keep talking about Now, the Christmas album, which is genuinely my favourite LP. People go, what? That's your favourite album? I go, yeah, it is. The compilation from 1985, which is the first big Christmas collection. Yeah. And obviously Mudd's on there, Wizard's on there, Slade's on there, Elton John's on there, but no Wombles.
Well, the Wombles should have taken the place of someone who we've mentioned and has since been excised from it.
Yeah.
They would have been much better there. They would have been less problematic as the years went by.
Well, they re-released that album. They changed the track list a little bit for obvious reasons. They brought it out again a few years ago. Still no Wombles.
Such a shame.
They were robbed.
Yeah, wombled. That doesn't make any sense. So in terms of the Womble's output, after we've got Wombling Merry Christmas, we've got like another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 things that get into the charts at some position between 1975, big gap, 1998, then in 2000.
And then another little flurry around 2010, 2011, because they were at Glastonbury and they re-released Wombling Merry Christmas then as well and gave it a video and things.
Yes, but I think perhaps the different modes of consumption of music perhaps denied them a place in the charts that time, possibly by then.
Yeah, but 1975 is an interesting year in Womble's really, because it's when it starts to die down, really. I think, obviously, all crazes and have a shelf life, really, and you start to see the chart positions fall a little bit. The fourth and final album is there, which is Super Wombling, which is the best one by far, the most elaborate one. It's got the best parodies. It's a brilliant, like I've mentioned, the James Bond one. That's also the album that's got this Rick Wakeman parody on it, which is just amazing, just like stunning. It's as good as any genuine prog rock track. The King Merton Womble and the Journey to the Center of the Earth.
It's an audacious thing to do, but it sounds like, you know, Mike Batt's the sort of person who just didn't think, oh, that seems a bit daft or a bit too much. He would just go for it because, like you say, he clearly had the skills, the connections and the goodwill, presumably, from people to support him doing this stuff.
Yeah, and that's the year they do Wombling White Tie and Tails as well, which I think is probably the best known song from that year, which is kind of a big old Hollywood song and dance number. Again, it appears in that rubbish film from a few years later, Wombling Free. It's kind of a Fred Astaire tribute that's on the album, and that came out as a single. Fred Astaire himself liked it, didn't know what the Wombles were, but liked that song.
That's amazing. That's an amazing bit of trivia.
See, I've listened to a lot of Mike Batt interviews as well.
Yeah, it suddenly struck me then as you were talking that there'll be people who might listen to this podcast who have never seen anything to do with the Wombles. Perhaps some of our listeners in America, maybe, things like that around the world. We will just sound like complete madmen talking about this. The amount of times we've said the word Womble.
Well, it's, you know, the Americans at least will know the Banana Splits. So just imagine the Banana Splits, but slightly more rodent-y.
Yeah.
You know, if the Banana Splits were kind of, they don't have badges, do they, in America either? What do they have? They have rats. Surely they have rats. Imagine the Banana Splits as rats.
Possums, maybe, something like that.
Imagine the Banana Splits as opossums, and just put two and two together. Add a bit of Beatles, a bit of, you know, AM radio, as they say, AM radio pop, and you're kind of there.
And you've conjured up a Womble. Right, let's close then with a little bit more reflection on Wombling Merry Christmas. I mean, has it got all the musical elements you need for a Christmas classic, do you think?
Yeah, well, we've got big featured saxophones, and which I think he's pretty much, by this stage, he's only really copying Roy Wood the year before. We think of it as such a staple now, but a lot of that comes from that Roy Wood and Wizard song. But we've got the saxophones, we've got sleigh bells. We haven't got a children's choir, but we've got a lot of Mike Batt. He does his kind of big multi-track thing. He's one of those people who's brilliant, just overdubbing his voice over and over again. You know, what I think about is the Kirsty MacColl effect, where there's just, you know, dozens of Mike Batts all over it. So we have got a choir, we have got sleigh bells, we have got a saxophone. We've got a bit of a steady backbeat. It's a bit of a, you can have a dance to it. It's kind of the perfect Christmas song, really.
It's a wonderful little thing, and I would encourage anyone who hasn't added it to their Christmas playlists to get onto Spotify, because it is, like you say, all this stuff's online. And on Spotify, in fact, it is the most popular Womble song by some 300,000 plays.
Well, it's nice to see that it's finally getting its moment in the modern limelight. It must be turning up on people's playlists and, you know, having its time.
And at 700,000 plays, it'll have earned Mike Batt, I don't know,
you can have
50p
chips
or something, maybe. Something like that. Oh, the streaming industry.
Oh, dear. I think there are some Womble CDs still in print. And there are some Womble songs on that Best Of that's just come out as well. So there are ways of obtaining Womble songs which might mean he can, you know, extend from chips to having a pie with it as well.
Wonderful stuff. I do hope he has a very Womble-inspired Christmas, enjoying all the fruits of his Womble labours. And as I hope you're going to do as well, Daryl. So, I mean, all that's left for me to say is I hope that you have a merry Wombling Christmas as well.
Yeah, I will womble as best as I can under the circumstances. my wombling activities are restricted this year, as with everyone else's, but keep on wombling next year.
Stay safe, stay wombling. Thanks, Daryl.
No worries. Bye-bye.